At one time, the federal government was a career destination. Today, things are more fluid. It works both ways, with people moving from industry into government, usually for a short time. But for a variety of reasons, a large number of people seem to be leaving government for the private sector. My next guest thinks this could mean a brain drain in crucial cybersecurity skills. Greg Kushto is a former cyber official at Agriculture and now the director of the security practice at Force 3. He joins me now. Mr. Kushto, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about your agriculture experience. What did you do there? It was 4 years, correct?
Yes, I was there for 4 years. I worked in multiple different groups within the CIO office at USDA. One was technology planning and architecture. The other was the Agricultural Security Operations Center, both of which had a cyber focus.
All right. So what have you observed now that you're in the private sector with respect to what's going on with cyber people in the federal government?
I think the main thing that's really happened in cyber is we've really spent so much time over the past 5 years convincing people that there really was cyber issues and cyber threats out in the world. And people have finally seen that, but yet there have been no ramp up for the amount of cyber professionals available. So what you've seen is that there's a very limited set of truly skilled cybersecurity experts. And generally, they're going to follow wherever they're going to get the best compensation. Most times, that's going to be the private sector. They're a lot freer to pay salaries and bonuses and work with schedules and have the newest, best equipment to really help people want to move to that direction.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Suppose the federal government simply said, well, since we can hire this as a service, say, the operation of network operation centers or security operation centers, maybe we don't need the people on staff. We can just use them as contractors.
That's really kind of how the government's been over the past 10 to 15 to 20 years. The issue is that we've run into a lot of different situations at different agencies where you don't have cybersecurity professionals directing all of the outsourcing. So you have companies in there that are providing resources to do the cybersecurity work, but maybe the GS or the combination of employees they're reporting to aren't necessarily cybersecurity professionals. Or perhaps they've done that in the past, but they're not quite as up to date as what's been going on in the past year or two. And that's really created a situation where you don't have that overall architecture in place. And I think that this is things that DHS's CDM program is trying to do, where you're creating that architecture so it's easier to go ahead and outsource that to help combat the brain drain. But it's still necessary to have those cybersecurity architects, I say selfishly since that's my role, in the government helping to direct which way they should be going.
So that implies there are really two levels of skill. One is the management of cybersecurity, and then at the other level is the people that actually do the speeds and feeds and watch the monitors.
Correct. And there's obviously demand for all of those, but at the very least for any large organization, especially the federal government, you're going to want that cybersecurity manager or cybersecurity architects who's going to have a staff of still cybersecurity engineers who can then work with outsourcing to the different companies and providing the manpower to get all of cyber done. So, but you still need that level. And when you have some of those in-house talents, the people that are actually sitting there looking at the pane of glass, making sure there's nobody there, they're able to better inform on the inside as well. You know, a lot of times in the government, you'll have your outsourcing partner, you'll have your manufacturers, and they'll come to you and say, oh, we see this and we see that. And you're constantly balancing, are they just trying to get a bigger contract? Do they just want to sell more things? What should I do here? So having that cybersecurity knowledge really allows you to make a lot better decisions.
And what are the types of skills that you think are needed at the technical level these days? We talk about cybersecurity training all the time, and the government is always saying it doesn't have enough cyber-trained people. But what are they trained specifically to do?
Well,
should they be now?
Sure. There's a number of different jobs that they can really train to do. I think there's really three levels. There's the architect slash manager who's going to have that overall picture, who's going to be able to figure out what their security posture is, how they're going to get to it, right? So is it new tools? Is it better tools? Is it more people? They're going to be able to sit down and put that picture together. Then you've got the cyber engineer who's actually going to take those tools, install them, configure them, figure out how they best work together and get that information. And then you've got analysts, right? So the analysts are actually going to use those tools to look through your network, to look through your computers, to try to find the malicious traffic or quote unquote bad guys and actually stop and get them out of the network. And this is just the technical focus. There's a whole other side, obviously, as well, with FISMA and NIST and the RMF on the policy and procedure side.
We're speaking with Greg Cushto. He's director of the security practice at Force 3. And in looking at the workforce, is there a ratio? Is there some level, some metric that agencies can use to know how many people they actually need for cybersecurity? In other words, can one analyst look at a network of 10,000 people, for example?
So, again, I think that really depends. It depends on what data you have, how well it needs to be protected, and what the mission is for your organization, for your sub-agency, for your agency. If you're talking about somewhere like Forest Service, where they have maps of America and are tracking forest fires, you may want the public to be able to see where all this information is. If you're talking about a DoD project, you know, in a base somewhere, obviously you're going to need a lot more cybersecurity people for that, since it is going to be top secret or classified. So it really depends on what you're doing. A good rule of thumb is really about 10% of your IT spend should be going towards securing whatever that project is. So if you have $5 million for setting up a citizen-based service, then 10% of that really needs to go around securing that. And then if you use that along with your resources, that's really going to give you an idea of how you should be able to fund things.
So it's up to those architects and managers, you would say, to do the workforce planning part of cybersecurity.
Oh, yes, very much so. You can't really just get... You know, the issue with cybersecurity, it's a good issue and it's a bad issue. It's that, you know, you're not solving a concrete, finite problem. It's not some, I need a cell phone, so I go buy a cell phone and I've solved my problem. Cybersecurity, you're fighting human beings. Now, human beings may be using computers, but at the end of the day, it's human beings you're fighting. So if you stop them for whatever they're doing today, they're going to figure out a different way to do it tomorrow. So you've always got to be looking, reviewing your environment, reviewing what you're trying to secure, and figuring out how you can keep that up to date, because it's constantly changing.
If you are dealing with people on the other end of the wire there, and there are well-known hackers, there are well-known hacker groups, do they have style that can be recognized?
That's an interesting question. There's definitely different ways that hacker groups do things that enable cyber analysts, manufacturers, cyber threat groups, industry groups, to track and kind of get an idea of who's doing what. So yeah, there's different ways that you can do that. And that allows you, if you recognize this and you say, oh wait, I was at a conference and I talked to somebody else and their agency just mentioned the same characteristics, you're able to better share information that way. So yes, there's definitely tracking mechanisms you can do around that. It's called indicators of compromise.
All right, getting back to the brain drain issue, you have been in government and you've been attracted to it and to the private sector. And you've got some ideas about what the government could do to attract cyber people to come in. What are some of those?
So I really think it branches out into two different areas. One is obviously overall compensation. And by compensation, I don't just mean money, because obviously that's the easy answer. Pay everybody more money. That's not going to work, right? But it's also about figuring out how you can attract people from college or attract people who maybe have programming and hacking skills. There's an initiative that the Pentagon's doing called Hack the Pentagon, where they're allowing people to get access to this code and look through it and find mistakes. And that's going to enable people to not only learn and grow their own skill set, but it's going to make them want to go work there and find more things like that. And I think that's really, really where the government has focused and needs to continue to focus, is how can we find and recruit and train cybersecurity professionals in the early stages of their career to get to that mid-level. I think that's the easiest thing that they can do, which doesn't involve saying, okay, we need a bucket of money so we can start giving it out to people. The second big area is focusing on making sure you've got the technology available. One of the advantages of the private sector is you do have the brand new technology, cutting edge, where in the federal government, due to lifecycle management, due to the different types of compliance you have to do, you're usually a couple versions behind. So trying to figure out how to speed up that cycle where you're getting the newest equipment out there, or you're a lot of times even installing the newest updates where you don't necessarily have to pay for anything. You just need to install the brand new version of whatever you're using. So figuring out how to streamline that life cycle to more quickly deploy that, I think will also keep the younger talent you're recruiting more invested, because they are going to be learning the newest, quote unquote, most fun things.
Greg Kushto is director of the security practice at Force 3. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.